Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, happy Easter, and welcome to Solder Smoke 53. It's Sunday, the 8th of April, 2007. About 10 hours, 24 minutes GMT here in London. And very happy to talk to you guys on this Easter Sunday morning. Nice day here in London. Nice spring day. I know many of you are dealing with snowstorms, but none of that here in southern England. First this week, I'd like to talk a little bit about that bit of legislation that we discussed on April 1st. The law had a kind of unusual number to it. Many of you noticed it, many of you did not. The number was NJHR 040107. Now the NJHR bit, well, that sounds kind of normal. New Jersey House Resolution sounds vaguely legislative. But that 040107, well, guys, that should have been a bit of a giveaway. I wouldn't feel bad about getting caught up in this little bit of ham radio April 1st tradition. Many, many people were taken in by it. The thing that's scary about it is that the story about a ban on soldering in the home is just so believable these days. It kind of matched up very well with the discussion about the ban on solder with lead in it. And since many places have become so kind of legislative in their approach to safety issues, well, I think people could be forgiven for being taken in on this one. I think we had some fun with it. Hope there's no hard feelings. And again, I just say that this is kind of Solder Smoke's participation in a long tradition of ham radio April Fool gags. I've been taken in by a few April Fool's stories myself. Not really in the ham radio area, although I found some of the QST articles believable. I never actually started building any of them. But there were a few other stories that I was taken in by. And I read with interest some a little BBC report on some of the other stories that over the years have taken people in. The BBC in the 1950s ran a story on TV about a development in Switzerland. They said that because of really good weather and because of success in combating the evil spaghetti weevil, the spaghetti farmers of central Switzerland were having a record crop. BBC viewers were shown pictures and film of the happy Swiss spaghetti farmers harvesting their crop from the spaghetti trees. And apparently in the weeks that followed, BBC was deluged with letters from viewers who wanted to know how they could plant spaghetti trees in their garden plots. So anyway, anyone who was taken in by NJHR 040107, don't feel bad. I see it as a bit of an exercise. We're ready now. We have here at Solder Smoke a fairly large collection of angry and well-written emails ready to be dispatched to any state legislature that dares to make a move in this direction. So, guys, don't worry about it. You're not going to have to turn in your soldering irons just yet. And like I said, the campaign is ready to go if we ever hear that a real move in this area is in the offing. Another thing I wanted to mention, I got a real nice email, and let me just get a piece of paper here. Got a real nice email about an article that has appeared in the IQRP magazine. I had not even been aware of IQRP, but it's obviously the Italian equivalent to the GQRP Club. And IQRP has, in their April 2007 edition, reprinted one of the articles on Mike KL7R's website about his efforts to do impedance measurement. We discussed this in a solder smoke a couple months back. Mike did a lot of work on it and had some real nice pictures on his website of the system that he was using for measuring impedance. And the nice folks at the Italian QRP Club were nice enough to reprint it with under Mike's name in their journal. I know Mike would be very, very pleased by that. And so I thank everybody in the club who was responsible for it. It's a really nice magazine, and Ivan is the guy who sent it to me, and I want to thank Ivan for that. It's a terrific magazine, and it's very reminiscent of Sprat, a magazine that you all know is a big hit in the worldwide QRP community. The IQRP magazine has got the same kind of format, the same kind of feel to it, and a very, very nice publication. So I thank Ivan for sending that to me. It's particularly useful for me because I'm in the process of teaching myself Italian. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we are getting ready to move. We're leaving the UK, and this summer we're going to move to Italy. And so I've got a few months now to kind of adapt my Spanish and Portuguese to Italian. And the IQRP journal is going to be a big help because it provides an additional incentive for me to read Italian. I'll be reading about QRP and homebrewing, so that makes it a whole lot easier and more pleasant. Speaking of QRP magazines, yesterday was a red letter day here at M0HBR, a happy day. I went out to the mailbox, and there was the familiar little plastic-covered magazine, Sprat, the Journal of the GQRP Club. Issue number 130, Spring 2007, had arrived in my mailbox, and a good one it is. I'll just give you guys a quick review of the most important parts of it. I think the most noteworthy thing here is the opening note from George Dobbs, G3RJV. George announces something very important for Sprat and the QRP community. I'll read you what he writes. Gus Taylor, G8PG. In May of this year, Gus Taylor, G8PG, will have been a licensed radio amateur for 70 years. Congratulations, Gus. As you will see later in this issue, Gus has decided to retire from writing his long-standing column, Antennas, Anecdotes, Awards, and resign as the club's awards board manager. The replacement for the awards manager is underway, and we have yet to find another writer for the column. May I, on behalf of all club members, thank Gus for his long and hardworking service to the club. Gus was a founder member, number 4, and has added richness to the work of the GQRP club, not only as awards manager and Sprat columnist, but in a kindly and understanding way. He has helped individual members with their antenna problems. Gus will remain as a life member of the club and, of course, someone to seek out and work on the air. Well, I want to say, I want to add my voice to the expression of thanks that George has given in Sprat. Over the years, I've been a real fan of Gus Taylor and his column. And it's filled with the kind of real wisdom about antennas and antenna construction and radio theory that I found very useful. At one point, I was really struggling to understand how antennas operate and how radio waves are generated. It's always a bit of a mystery. I suppose it always will be. But there were a couple lines in one of Gus's columns that really hit home with me. So much so that I made a copy of the page from Spratt and taped it inside my notebook. And it dealt with how important it is to monitor antenna current and to get the high current point of the antenna as high as possible. And so I found little bits and big chunks of wisdom like that in many of Gus's columns. So I'll be missing seeing his byline here, but we'll always be grateful for the contributions that he's made over the years. And I guess now is the time to try to dust off that HW8 and see if I can work him on the air. Let's see, moving through Spratt. On page 3, we have The Lemon Transmitter, An Idea and a Challenge, by Johnny Appel, SM7, UCZ. And it deals with the challenge of building a VFO-controlled transmitter that works on 1 volt. Neat little project there. He's got it running off a AA battery. He's got the schematic, and he's actually worked some stations with it. Very interesting. Next we have The Twofer, A Simple Transmitter for 6 Bands, by Doug Hendricks, KI6DS. Another great project from Doug. Next we have A Simple Loudspeaker Tip, by Gert, PA3CRC, in the Netherlands. Then there's a reflex receiver project, very interesting, simple little regen receiver project, called the KTH Traveler, by Joris, PE1KTH, in the Netherlands. Built it on kind of a simple stock PC board. A homemade RIT potentiometer by Hans, DL9SCO. You can see this is a very international issue of Spratt, articles from all over. Here's a really interesting article, and I found this useful. It's Making RF Chokes, by John Beach, G8SEQ, in Coventry. We've all faced this problem. Sometimes you need an RF choke, and they don't have one. And you don't have one in stock, and you know it's not the kind of thing that you can, you know, head off down to the 7-Eleven to pick up a, you know, 1,000 microhenry RF choke. But Gus describes how you could make one with just some old resistors and some specified lengths of wire using a drill and a drill chuck to wind them. And he gives you some rough guidance on how to estimate the amount of wire you need. For example, it says here, take a high value greater than 47K resistor and some 32 gauge enameled wire. For a 100 microhenry choke, you will need about 1 meter of wire. Well, amazing. There you go. You just get the old resistor, pull out a meter of wire, get the drill, get to winding, and you've got your RF choke. It's a real kind of practical thing, and I mean, that's the kind of great advice and information that you get from Spratt. Next, there's an article on homebrew ladder lines, some ideas, from Luca, IV3TEK, in Italy. And he's got a great idea about how to make some homebrew ladder line. Here's an article that I really liked, and I read this thing. I read this article in London's Holland Park yesterday as my kids were running around in the park. I stuck Spratt in my pocket as we went off, and I read Pete Giuliano, W6JFR's article on the evolution of a simple SSB transceiver. This is really nice. It's Pete's description of his SSB transceiver, but mostly it's a description of his struggles with various IF filter frequencies and VXO frequencies to get into the different ham bands. And it's very well done, a lot of real good information about how to use standard crystals that are available for your homebrew projects. Pete started out with the goal of building a cheap and easy 17-meter QRP SSB transceiver. And I'm sure you'll all be interested in that project. Then there's an article, Mods to G3 EJS's Tuner, by Derek Alexander, G4 GVM. There's an active aerial using an operational amplifier by Hajo Brandt, DJ1ZB. Very interesting project. There's an article on the Softrox RXTX SDR QRP transceiver by Jan G0BBL. And then let's see. Then there's the last column, Antennas, Anecdotes, and Awards by Gus G8PG. We'll be sad to see his byline disappearing from Sprat. But he goes off with a very, very positive, nice, and upbeat note there, looking back on his long years of involvement in ham radio and QRP. So again, thanks to Gus for all the help over the years. Let's see. What else? Tony Fishpool's member of Secretary News. We're looking forward to seeing Tony at an upcoming rally. I'm hoping we're going to be able to get together and say hello there. Communications and contests. There's the 2007 QRP calendar. There's the Members News by Chris Page, N4CJ, also known as G4BUE. And I see my own call in there, a little note about our upcoming move to Italy. Always great to catch up on the news. And then we're back into the ads. And as I noted last week, true radio amateurs will also read the ads in the backs of these magazines. So I was checking out what's available from the GQRP Club sales section. Good stuff as always. All right. Okay. Moving on here. I got my papers kind of spread out and disorganized here, guys, so just give me a second. I meant this week to talk a little bit about soldering irons. I have this stuff here to talk about it. Ah, yes. There it is. I meant to do a review of soldering irons. There's been some discussion in QRPL about which soldering iron to use, which soldering tip to use. And I went back through this a while back with Mike, and he gave me a recommendation for a soldering station. And it's the Elenco, ELENCO Electronics, Deluxe Soldering Station. And there's various models, model SL5, SL540, SL5SPL. But it's a real simple little temperature-controlled soldering iron. And I, after many years of using a really, really almost too simple kind of 25-watt, just plug it into the wall, no temperature controlled soldering system, on Mike's recommendation, I got a hold of this thing. And it's been really great. It's been good. The one thing I like about it is the tip. Well, many things I like about it, but the one thing I like is the much more sophisticated tip that they have on it. It has a tip on it that has four different types of metals. It's got a tin plated, iron plating, chrome plating, and a copper center. I had been using just, I think, straight copper in the tips that I had been using. And man, it seemed like I went through a tip in about 2 or 3 weeks. And they got all pitted and rusty and ugly, and it was really, really nasty. But these specially made tips with tin plating, iron plating, chrome plating, and a copper center seem to hang in there a lot longer, and they're easier to keep clean and shiny. It's got a little sponge there. I think I got mine from Ocean State Electronics, if I recall correctly, and I would recommend it. It's been fun, and occasionally I get over to the workbench and actually use it to melt some solder, which brings us to this week's kind of workbench report. And I'm realizing that I've been spending far too much time in front of the keyboard and far too little time in front of the soldering iron. I yesterday decided that I was going to build something whether I needed it or not. And I have sort of evolving over there on the workbench over all these many months the combination of the ceramic 20 meter variable ceramic oscillator and now the several stages of Class A RF amplification that I've been putting together with the help of LT Spice Experimental Methods in RF Design and email from friends. It's been coming together, and now I've been kind of trying to figure out what to do with it. You know, it's sitting there, it's ready to produce RF, all dressed up and really nowhere to go. One of the problems is, of course, that the ceramic resonators are up in the phone portion of the band, and so that kind of argued for making this thing into a phone transmitter, perhaps eventually a transceiver. But I needed some sort of modulation system, obviously. I just kidding around. I took out one of these little transistor radio audio transformers and tried to do some collector modulation just to come up with an AM signal to see if I could AM modulate this thing. And I could. I was far from 100%. I didn't have a whole lot of audio going into it, but I was able to generate some AM signals into the dummy load on 20 meters. But I knew that it's tough enough running a QRP phone when you're running single sideband. It's tougher when you're running double sideband, and I've never even tried it using plain old AM. I think that might be just a bit over the top, as the Brits say. So I decided that double sideband should be about as daring as I should get. And that, of course, required the construction of a balanced modulator. Now, I immediately, almost instinctively, turned to solid-state design for the radio amateur. And I know that Experimental Methods is the better and more updated book, and I know that everything from SSDRA is in Experimental Methods, but, you know, SSDRA is almost like an old friend. It's got the pages are worn, it's all yellowed, and all my notes from previous projects, places where I spilled the coffee, marks where the high humidity in Santo Domingo stained the pages, all that kind of stuff is there. So I grabbed SSDRA, and realizing that these circuits aren't really all that exotic and haven't changed all that much over the years, I found myself on page 185 looking at figure 11, balanced modulators using two diodes. These circuits are ideal for the construction of simple DSB transmitters. See text for discussion of components. Well, there it is. And I just started gathering the parts, and it only looks like you need about 10 parts for this particular circuit. It uses a toroidal transformer, trifiller, three coils there. Got out a bit of enameled wire, took out three lengths of it, put one bit of it into the chuck of my hand drill, and then just slowly got that drill going and wound the three bits of enamel wire together. Checked to make sure nothing was shorted, none of it was, and then used the ohm meter to identify which bit goes to which bit, and which which goes into goes to which goes out, and marked them up. Got myself two little diodes. Had a pot, a variable resistor that was far too high in value. The diagram calls for about 100 ohms, and mine was up at 1,000. But with some parallel resistors put in there, I was able to get it effectively down to the value called for by the schematic. Had a little RF choke there on hand, one little bypass capacitor, and it was one of those real nice Saturday mornings. You guys know what I'm talking about. You got a kind of a blank piece of shiny copper in front of you. The soldering iron is warmed up. You've got all the parts you need. Cup of coffee on the workbench. And this thing went together, I guess, in about a half hour. And then, of course, I plugged it into the circuit, and I have the RF, which is at about, a little over 1 volt RMS going into the carrier input. And I just wanted to see if it would null out the carrier as it was supposed to, and whether I could kind of unbalance it by putting a little bit of DC on the AF input. And you know what? It didn't work. And I started some head scratching and looking at the circuit. And then it didn't take me long to realize that I put one of the diodes in backwards. So anyway, we got that straightened out, and now the thing is actually balanced modulating. I still need a bit more RF. The it does introduce loss there. I guess the loss is about 3 dB, maybe more. So I've got to maybe add one more stage of RF amplification to get up to 1 or 2 watts. But hey, it was fun. I built something. I melted some solder, and it was a good project. It just took, like I said, half hour to build it, probably another half hour to troubleshoot the 10 parts that I put together. But that's the way it goes sometimes. And like I said, this thing does seem to be evolving in the direction of an extremely ugly transmitter for 20 meter. Double sideband. I may take it with me during the moving process this summer. Let's see what else. I have also resolved to try to make some more contacts. I got on 17 meter sideband with the homebrew rig yesterday. Conditions were pretty good, and I managed to work Echo Alpha 8 stroke Italy Kilo 1 Juliet Papa Victor out there in the Canary Islands. I got a 5.7 report, but my signals are never really strong enough here from central London to get into real good kind of reg two conversations on 17. So I found myself turning to our old friend Echolink, and I've had some good luck with that. It's just a series of really nice QSOs over the last few days. I talked to Victor Kilo 8, Mike Foxtrot, Mark, via a UHF repeater in Darwin, up there in northern Australia, and talked to Mark as he was out mobile, going around doing some chores there on the outskirts of Darwin. That was real interesting. And this morning I got on Echolink and talked to an old friend, Nigel, Zulu Lima 2, Sierra Echo Alpha, ZL2 SEA. Nigel is the sysop for one of the nicest repeater systems on Echolink. That's the ZL1VK Papakura repeater. Those of you with Echolink should give it a try. Just go to the New Zealand section, look for ZL1VK-R, and click on it. You get this really cool greeting when you come on. You get this greeting from the machine that gives you bird calls from New Zealand. Well, Nigel is not in New Zealand now. He's up in Australia. His work has taken him there. He's got an excellent QTH on the beach. And in the course of our Echolink contact, he sent me some pictures of his beachside operating position. Really enviable. Very nice. So it was good to catch up with Nigel. And I might try to talk him into making a guest appearance here on Solder Smoke. Nigel travels around a lot because of his work and does some really interesting things with ham radio from some exotic locations. So we might try to convince him to come on here and talk. Also via Echolink and via some of the internet linked receivers, I was listening to 75 meter AM on the East Coast in the United States. That's always fun. I used to love listening to those long rag chews with what we used to call the old buzzard transmissions on 75 meters, 3885. If any of you guys are looking for something to listen to in the evening or early morning, just tune into that frequency. It's often it's often good to do it in the early evening. Things seem to deteriorate a bit in many different ways as the hour gets late on 75 meters, so you guys know what I'm talking about. But I always used to love to listen to those QSOs, and I guess that's really how I got my start in ham radio, just listening to those QSOs. I had a Lafayette HA600A receiver that I got for Christmas when I was about 13 years old, and it would resolve SSB, but of course the AM sounded a lot better, and had that kind of warm, kind of full quieting sound. You'd hear that big ker-chunk as those DX100s and Rangers went into transmit mode, and those guys would make a long transmission. I was then away from radio for a long time, and when I came back, I listened again and found that many of the same old call signs and familiar voices were still there on 3885. So that was a very nice surprise. And then this morning I was on Echolink again talking to VK1HLM, who was setting things up for a Cub Scout operation there in Australia. That was fun. Listen, it's time for Solder Smoke Band Sweep. Nothing really. I'm really grateful for last week's program on the satellite downlink by Ray M0DHP. Thanks very much for that. We got some really nice comments. Everybody found it very interesting. Nothing quite so exotic this week. Just a little bit of a listen to a band that doesn't get a whole lot of attention, but it should be of real interest to all QRPers and home brewers. It's the 30 meter band. I used to work on this band with a little homebrew transmitter that I put together based on a design in QRP Classics. It was called the VXO controlled 6-watter. Of course, I ran it down at 5 just to keep things legal, guys. You know what I'm talking about. But it's a nice band. It's a CW, I guess digital mode only, no phone, no contests. And it's kind of an interesting mix of kind of sort of like 40 meters and sort of like 20 meters. And I tuned the Drake 2B through that band yesterday and listened and actually watched on the Audacity screen some of the CW coming through. So we'll leave this on it has a little bit. It runs a little bit long, but we'll include it in the code practice category. And those of you can try to copy the code a bit as you're driving to work or getting ready to land at LAX or whatever else you're doing as you're listening to this. So let's turn it over now for this week's segment of Solder Smoke Band Sweep. All right. Welcome to another edition of Solder Smoke Band Sweep. And the time is 11:27 Greenwich Mean Time. We're tuned to the 30 meter band around 10.1 megahertz. I'm using a Drake 2B. DL6 MDP. I'm going to demonstrate the use of the Drake 2B's secret weapon, the Q multiplier, when DL6 MDP calls CQ again on the turn. Here goes. He's barely moving the S meter now. There you go. That's the Q multiplier in action. He's now 5.9. That's why people love the Drake 2B's Q multiplier. It really really brings in those weak signals. You're basically throwing in a regenerative stage. You turn it off, you'll see the difference. You'll hear the difference. That's without. There you go. In. Nobody is calling this poor guy. Thank you.
chirp. Must be a home brewer. I can't hear the other station. I can't hear the PA station that he was telling about, but you guys heard he was telling him he had some problems with his transmitter, drifting and chirpy. The F station that we were just listening to from the south of France had a very nice fist, and I was watching his transmissions because I'm recording this on the computer, and the waveform is scrolling across the screen. And it's neat because you can see the CW characters very clearly, and you can check on the spacing, and you can look and see the spacing between his dits was absolutely perfect and uniform. He's obviously using a keyer, but real nice and kind of fun to see the CW scrolling across the screen. All right, nothing terribly unusual this week, just a visit to 30 meters on this edition of Solder Smoke Band Sweep. I was asked to tone down the gong a little bit. Apparently the gong had been overdriving some of the Bud earphones on the MP3 players out there. And we don't want the Solder Smoke Mailbank gong to damage the equipment or the hearing of any of our listeners. So there was we banged the gong faintly today. That brings us to Solder Smoke Mailbag. Just a few items here this week. We've been getting a lot of very interesting email from one of our younger listeners, Thomas, LA3PNA, up there in Norway. He is a real fan of Solder Smoke and home brewing, and is doing some very admirable home brewing projects up there. Thomas is 19 years old, which puts him in a much younger demographic than most of us, and it's always encouraging to come across young people who are interested in this kind of technology. And Thomas is up there, and he's in the process of building a spectrum analyzer, which is, as you all know, a really ambitious project, and he's well along with it. So good luck to you, Thomas, with the spectrum analyzer project, and we'll hope to get updates from you. We'll let the Solder Smoke listeners hear how you're doing. Got a nice email from Brad, N1VWD, who talked to us about his interest in suitcase radios, the kinds of parasets that were used by people involved in clandestine radio work against the Nazis during the Second World War. And I was recently in the British Army Museum here in central London and saw one of these sets. I thought of you, Brad, when I saw it, and they had the story of the very heroic female agent from the Special Operations Executive who took one of these things and parachuted into occupied France. It's some really courageous radio work. I know many hams are interested in the technology that was used to keep these vital messages coming back,
and the people who were so brave when they used them. So anyway, Brad, I got your message, and thank you very much. It just so happens that the same week that I got it, I was in the museum looking at one of the parasets that they have on display there. Very interesting. Got a nice email from Fred at KF6HQC, talking about how much either he enjoys solder smoke and his interest in QRP and home brewing. And he just mentions that he's selling, just sort of as a kind of a fun sideline over there, he's selling what he thinks is one of the world's, perhaps the world's smallest iambic paddle. And he calls it the Dinky, which is a good name for it. So I guess you can get to Fred's site just by Googling KF6HQC. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of Solder Smoke 53. I hope you've enjoyed this one. I'm going to cut it short a little bit today, I think. I'm going to go out and take the kids to the park and take advantage of this nice weather on Easter Sunday. I hope everybody has a real good Easter and a real good week ahead. Thanks for tuning in to Solder Smoke. 73s from London.